Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 184 of the Spoiler Alert Podcast, brought to you by MovieOutsiders.com. I'm Danny, and I'm here with Mike, and tonight we'll be discussing the 2017 adaptation of Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express, directed by and starring Kenneth Branagh. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Danny. How are you doing?
I'm doing really, really well. And right off the bat, I gotta tell people, I'm a huge fan of Agatha Christie and murder mysteries like this. This is my jam.
I've been excited to see this film and discuss it with you because I know that about you. And would you believe that this is the first time I've seen any adaptation of this film? I have not read the book or any Agatha Christie novels in my life.
Ever.
And I know that's sort of an embarrassing thing to admit. I know that she's a prolific mystery author. I like this genre of books and film. It's just, it's new to me. And so I've been excited to see it and discuss it with you.
Well, let me throw some non-fact check stats at you regarding Agatha Christie, because this is some strong source material that they had to work with here. Agatha Christie novels, her estate claims that her work puts her third in the most widely published books after Shakespeare and the Bible. And that she has sold more than 2 billion copies of her collected works. In fact, her novel, And Then There Were None, just that book alone, has sold more than 100 million copies.
That's amazing.
It's amazing, right? And now this detective, so she had two detectives for whom she was famous. There was Miss Marple and Hercule Poirot, which this story focuses on. Poirot was in 33 novels and 54 short stories. So an embarrassment of riches, one of the most widely known characters really of all time. Now, I totally agree. It's not, I mean, I feigned that it was surprising that you hadn't read any of her works or seen any of the things, but you're not alone. I mean, there's a whole generation of people who probably have never either heard of Agatha Christie or haven't picked up a book. But I mean, when you're selling 2 billion copies, you're pretty famous.
And researching for this podcast, I learned that there was like a whole BBC series around his character for like a decade.
Longer
than that, and he's been played by dozens of actors on stage and on screen over the years.
Tony Randall played him.
I am embarrassed. Tony Randall.
I know, in like a comedy.
Is Tony Randall dead? I honest to God, I'm embarrassed to say that I had, until this film, never heard of that character. Well, I heard of him in the trailer. Then after that was it, yeah.
Peter Ustinov played him, I think, 6 times. Albert Finney played him in the 1974 version of this story, for which he was nominated for an Oscar for his portrayal.
A film that you are a fan of, I remember you saying, yes?
I am a fan.
Okay.
And then David Suchet played him from 1989 until 2013 on the BBC. So David Suchet, I think they adapted every single one of the novels and several of the short stories. So over, you know, a 24-year period, he played Hercule Poirot. So there was a lot to choose from. And that's why honestly, right off the bat, I'm surprised that they chose this book, given there's so many books from which to choose.
And short stories.
And short stories. And then this one's already been adapted a few times, including the 1974 Sidney Lumet version, which was nominated for several Academy Awards, and which starred not only Albert Finney, but Sean Connery, Anthony Perkins, Vanessa Redgrave, Ingrid Bergman. I mean, this was...
I've heard of these people.
You may have heard of some of them, yeah.
Yes, right.
But okay, so you have not read this book. You'd not heard the story.
Correct.
So for everybody else who's listening who's not heard, read the story or seen any of the prior adaptations, here's a high-level plot summary of Murder on the Orient Express. The story opens with world-famous detective Hercule Poirot following the successful completion of a case in Jerusalem as he is asked to return to England to consult on a grave matter of urgency. His friend happens to run the Orient Express train and offers him a berth on the train as it makes its way from Istanbul. The luxury train hosts really a collection of characters, including a professor, a princess, a teacher, a doctor, a gangster, a butler, and so forth.
It's like Clue.
It's like Clue. During the night, one character is murdered, and the train is caught by a snowdrift. And the director of the train asks Hercule Poirot if he will take up the case and solve the crime before they are rescued so that he can turn over to the police not only the corpse of the murdered man, but the responsible party and just sort of wrap it all up so the train can keep on moving. Begrudgingly, Poirot takes the case, questions the passengers, and uncovers the startling truth of who the dead man really was and how and why he was murdered. And that's Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Good, what did you think? What did you think of this movie?
I can't really answer that. I saw it earlier this afternoon and I've forgotten it. I found it so forgettable. I almost dozed off a few times. How about you?
Before I can answer it, I have to just note, you mentioned it. I am a fan of the 1974 version. In fact, right. I might put it in my top 20, possibly my top 10 of all time. Like, I
you're
really...
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh, you're that big a fan. That's really awesome. All right.
I really enjoy these books and that version, but I did not enjoy much of this at all. I, too, was struggling to stay awake, and there were so many changes that were made from the book and from the prior versions that made no sense, that added nothing, and in fact detracted from the story and changed characters.
Would you elaborate on a couple of those? Because it was my first question that I was dying to ask you is, how close is this to the source material or the prior version? I've not read the book. I did not see the original film adaptation. So I have no idea how close this is. Are characters different? Are their names different? Is their whole backstory different? Is the whole plot behind the plot different in this film than the original? I have no clue.
So it's a little of all of the above. I'll tell you, and again, even though this is spoiler alert, I'm going to ask that we don't spoil the whodunit, because part of the joy of watching a whodunit is either figuring it out or waiting to be told whodunit.
Okay.
And then I think that's really, especially for this particular story, because it's a unique whodunit. But there were lots of little changes made. Like, there's a character called Dr. Abutnut, played by Leslie Odom Jr., who... I think this is his first film work. He was in Hamilton on Broadway. But in the last version in the book, that's Colonel Abutnut. And he was originally played by Sean Connery. So I don't know why they suddenly changed him to a doctor. They changed the name of the butler. Like, why just change the name of the butler? It makes no sense. But the biggest change that really bothered me is how Poirot is played. So in the books... And in especially David Suchet's long career playing him, Poirot is like a tiny, odd-shaped, little fussy guy. He is, you know, round, and his head is perfectly shaped like an egg, and he's got the little pointed mustache, and he's impeccable at all times. And he's kind of ingrating. Like, he's kind of obnoxious. He's so fussy. And Branagh plays him here like he's some sort of action hero. He chases people. He gets shot. He walks around with like his tie undone, like drinking booze, like talking to this photograph of his long lost love. And he, while Poirot has always been a bit of a ham in that he likes to, you know, at the end of the book is always him explaining how the crime was committed. He gets everyone together, right, and tells them here's how it was done. So he likes that. But here it's like he's shouting at them. And there's a point at the end of this movie where Poirot actually offers the killer the chance to kill him. Like, what? I mean, it was just...
So that was not a plot point in the original.
No, it was like the stupidest... Yeah. Like, it was really like Kenneth Branagh sat out to make this movie and launch a franchise and... wants Poirot to be a character that he can play over and over, but it's like his own vanity got in the way that he couldn't play him as a weird little dude who's a genius. He had to play him as a strapping, you know, even the mustache is like bigger and wilder and weirder than his mustache normally is. It's like this whole take is like him amped up to 20 on a scale of 1 to 10 and for no reason. I just don't understand what it was supposed to add.
Without having any frame of reference, I agree with what you're saying, and I'd argue that I found his character completely uninteresting. I had no interest in this man whatsoever. What his backstory is, why he does what he does, his odd mannerisms about looking for symmetry in the world bored me to tears.
Yeah. And a lot of Agatha Christie's work, I mean, Poirot's a major character, but he's also not, because he's not why you're reading, right? It's about the crime. It's about whodunit. And even a lot of the characters, frankly, are pretty thin, right? I mean, most of these novels, it's sort of a collection of types, you know? I mean, it's not a ton of really great character work, because it's really more about the puzzle. And in this, they're trying to make us care about Poirot, but who cares? I don't need, you're right. Yeah. I don't need to know his backstory. I don't need to see him stare out the sunset and recite like a soliloquy about the nature of crime.
Right.
Just saw and the
wax
fucking
philosophical
crime.
About nature and symmetry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird.
And these moments that he injected, these, like, there's an action scene where he's chasing a guy, you know, under the bridge, and he get off the train and he tackles someone and the guy was trying to destroy evidence. And it was like, A, that's not in the book. And B, it added nothing.
Yeah.
And C, when you think about it for like half a second, it's like, oh, why did that happen? And why was that? It was played off as like this big, exciting moment. And honestly, it feels like the filmmakers just felt that the audience would get bored, so they had to do something kind of exciting. But what they injected wasn't exciting. So I left even, yeah. It left me even more bored. Like, just have strong acting and good writing. And this scenario of being trapped with a killer surrounded by strangers in a foreign land is pretty terrifying.
Enough.
Should be, yeah.
Right.
It should be scary right. enough that an adult who gives it 2 seconds worth of thought can hang with it. And it felt like they were trying to jazz it up all over the place for no reason.
So the character that is a doctor in this film was what in the prior?
A colonel. A colonel in the army.
A colonel. Was he a black character in the original?
Sean Connery. No, so
it was Sean Connery. Okay, so it's Leslie Odom Jr. in this film, black man having a relationship with a white woman that is kind of hidden on the train. They don't make any sort of appearance that would indicate they are a couple. There's a scene where Willem Dafoe is acknowledging that he knows the two of them are together and kind of calling her out in the dining car and explaining how, you know, it's better that we don't intermingle races. You wouldn't pour your white wine into your red wine glass. It'll ruin both of them. And I thought that this scene was so hilarious because, first off, I don't understand why she has a glass of red wine and white wine at dinner. That seemed odd. Like, you would normally pick one and maybe have a couple of
right.
the one. But no, she did definitely have a glass of red wine and white wine. But then she mixes them together to prove a point to him that, no, a rosé is great. And she takes a sip, and there's no way that she can even hide her disgust with the mixing of the two wines. It's just like, I love a good rosé, and she takes a sip and looks like she's going to puke and walks off screen. And I couldn't stop laughing. I thought it was one of the best scenes of the movie.
I did not understand. I mean, other than to get Leslie Odom Jr., who was a fine actor in the movie, and then they felt like, well, okay, in 1930s, you know, in Eastern Europe, how would a black man be received, especially if he was dating a white woman? So we better acknowledge, you know, the elephant in the room by putting
right.
this whole extra scene in here about, like, race hating, which later, of course, Willem Dafoe's character walks back and is like, actually, he actually says, like, I'm half a Heeb myself, you know? Like, what are we doing here?
It's all over the place.
Yeah. In fact, also in this version, the director of the train is sort of like a young degenerate, right? Like he hangs out with prostitutes and he knows Poirot and he's sort of this wild oat sower kind of guy. And in the book and in the prior 74 adaptation, he's like an old man. He's like a 50, 60 year old man.
Oh, okay.
You know, so like, it's like, why make that change? Is there some demographic we're trying to reach with, like, the young Euro trash prostitute user crowd that they're trying to bring it.
Even though we're still setting it in 1930, right. Whatever. And since you brought it up, I'll just ask now. This wasn't even on my list, but I was so confused why he was so adamant that Poirot be able to solve this crime while their derailed train is getting re-railed. Like, I didn't understand the urgency of it. Like, I get that this is a problem, and I get that this is urgent. There's a dead body on the train.
Yeah.
And likely a murderer amongst them. But why was it so essential that it be solved before they start moving again? Like, what was his career on the line as a result of this murder? I didn't understand any of that.
Yeah, I think it's subtext. More of if they, you know, show up in, I think it was Prague is where they were going next. If they show up and the police just have a dead body, they're going to retain everybody or detain everyone. You know, the schedule of the train gets thrown way off. The schedule of these very wealthy and some famous people get derailed. You know, they're all inconvenienced. Whereas, hey, we're going to be stuck here a day or two. If you can just solve this, we show up with the dead body and the murderer, and then we can all just carry
Everything's
on.
Good.
Yeah, we just move on. You know, the police aren't going to work that hard because the famous detective has handed them the solution. They'll just accept it and we can all get on with our lives. It just... All right. So, I love the story. I love the characters. I love the source material. I'm a real big fan of these types of stories and books. I think this scenario is scary and should be a scary and dreadful scenario. And I would love to see Hercule Poirot make a comeback. I'd love to see more movies about this character. I just think...
Well, they tease one at the end. I think you will.
I think it's got to be directed by someone else because I think Brana is really overinflating and changing things and needs someone to rein it back in. I also just have to add that another thing I just didn't enjoy was the camera work. So there, when the body is discovered, when the victim is discovered, the camera is overhead, like looking down on the hallway of the train. And in fact... The camera doesn't even show the dead body. We just see the tops of their heads as they sort of come and go into the room. And it was totally distracting. Like, what is the point of this overhead shot? And why is this how you're framing it? And then later, during the sort of the reenactment of the crime, when Poirot's laying it all out, I thought that looked so poorly done and so poorly acted, filmed, edited. It looked worse than made for TV.
Well, they do. Yeah, I felt that all of the flashback scenes, it was a little odd that it's a movie that the flashback scenes are flashing back, I don't know, several hours, and they all have to be in black and white as opposed to the color film, which was weird. Like, we don't need to pretend that this happened 40 years ago. Also, black and white was pretty commonly used in the late 1930s. My first what's up with, and I'm being careful here not to spoil the Agatha Christie spoiler, so I don't know. Have you ever done like cross country train travel?
No.
Have you ever done that? I did when my sister and I were young. My family went to Seattle from Milwaukee, and so that's like a 40-hour trek across the country via Amtrak, and we actually had nice accommodations. There's no way that you can fit three people into a first class cabin on a train. So like I think that there's hilarious moments. I remember we did what was the Liam Neeson movie that we reviewed, Nonstop, that one where you were joking about how like I can't even like myself pee in an airplane bathroom, like it takes up all the room, yet they're having a fist fight to the death. No, there's no way you get more than two or three people in a cabin on an airplane or on a train. No way.
Well now let's also I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure it is, especially now. But this was also 80 years ago in Europe when luxury train travel was all the rage. And I have no idea how big these train cars were. But, I mean, this was high class. I mean, pretty nice train car. I'm sure liberties were taken.
I agree. But, like, we've all seen the layout of all of these cabins already. Like, there's two people that sit across from one another in, like, a bunk bed in there. And that's first class. Like, there's just no way.
Now, before we move on, I also just want to real quick share some of the other people in this movie. So we covered that Kenneth Branagh is in it and Leslie Odom Jr. But this also stars Daisy Ridley from Star Wars.
Right.
Oscar winner Penelope Cruz. Oscar winner Judi Dench. Oscar nominee Johnny Depp, Oscar nominee Michelle Pfeiffer, Oscar nominee Willem Dafoe. I don't know if Derek Jacobi's ever been nominated for an Academy Award.
No.
And then Josh Gad. He's like, oh, and Josh Gad. It's an all-star cast. I mean, this is like...
Absolutely,
this
yes.
is no this slouch. I mean, I kind of feel like they chose this story because they could pack it with all-stars.
It is a prestige ensemble piece, to be sure. Absolutely.
So you had What's Up with the Train. I have to even go back beyond that. What's up with the font? So now in the last episode, we talked about the terrible Imagine Dragons song that plays with this trailer. The font, even on the posters and for the movie, is like this blue, nearly neon, sort of high-tech looking font.
It's all Miami Vice looking.
Yeah, it was like, it's so out of place. And I feel like it just sets the tone for things in this movie are not going to be what they should be. And I feel like that's like the theme.
Though you take out the weird trailer music and the weird font on the poster, and everything else is period appropriate in the film. And I think that that's one thing that I at least appreciated, is that I thought that the set decoration was beautiful. I thought that, like, this movie made me want to go on a 2-day train ride across Europe. It looked awesome. Like, you know, this is the period where you show up to dinner in your suit, when yeah. you have cocktails beforehand, where you've got, you know, 3 porters on the train for every person in first class. It looked amazing and gorgeous. Now, I think it's a little bit easier to do on a film like this, where it's all set within a very confined space. This isn't like Thor Ragnarok, where you're expanding across planets and worlds, but it was beautiful, and the attention to detail was great. It made me romanticize about a trip like that.
I couldn't agree more. The production design and costume design, I thought, were both top-notch. Although, makeup, I have to say, Johnny Depp looks like he's made of wax. And I also have to say, what's up with...
Nicole Kidman.
What's up with Kenneth Branagh? His Poirot actually shares a piece of cake with Johnny Depp. Like, they're both... They're both eating off the same... Now, first of all, Poirot, no. He would not be caught sharing food with somebody... Let alone, I mean, I wouldn't eat cake in the same room with Johnny Depp. I'd be worried I'd get syphilis or something. And here he is munching on the same piece. What's up with Count Andreni, who is played by someone who I don't know. But in the beginning, when we are introduced to him, he gets into a bar fight. And honest to God, he like ballet kicks a guy. It's like he's a ballet bar fighter. I laughed out loud. Holy God. I laughed at how stupid... It was like, let's do a bar fight and let's make him use ballet. Right. What?
You mentioned Johnny Depp. What's up with Johnny Depp somehow escaping this whole new Hollywood asshole bloodbath unscathed? Like, why didn't they reshoot this movie a couple weeks ago with somebody other than Johnny Depp? How is this guy still on Disney amusement rides? Like, he's got some... skeletons in his closet that for some reason Kevin Spacey has just taken all of them for himself.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. I'm totally with you. What's up with the really long tracking shot at the train station that went on and on and on and was clearly aided by computers and which added nothing and was also dumb? At the beginning when they're all boarding the train and like the tracking shot and they're walking next to the train and then suddenly the camera follows somebody else and then it suddenly kind of goes in through the window and then it's following down the hallway and then it goes back out and then it was like, how many millions of dollars went into that shot and it was just a pointless, wasted garbage exercise?
I thought that the most fascinating part of this film, and wish that I would have learned more about, was how engineers in this era would re-rail a derailed train. Like, these poor... like, manually hand-pumping themselves miles down a track without any shelter at all in the midst of winter, and then arrive, there's like a dozen of them, and they're going to get a f***ing locomotive engine back onto a train that is teetering at a 45-degree angle off a precipice from an avalanche that was caused by lightning. Like, that was the most exciting part of this movie, and there was I didn't get to see any of it.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned that. So in the book and in the prior version, it's just a snowdrift, like in the middle of a field. Like, they're just kind of snowed in.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't understand why they decided here to have the train stop on a bridge overlooking a cliff. Like, that should have ratcheted up the tension. Like, if I was on that train, I'd be like, I can't stay in the train. I'm going to get off. I'm going to go, like, sleep in the snow. They had a tunnel. I'd be like, I'll go sleep in the tunnel. You know, we'll build a fire. We'll hang out there for the next 2 days. There's no way I'm just sitting on this wooden bridge. But there was none of that.
It's a rickety bridge. The locomotive is, like, hanging, like, at a weird angle.
Yeah.
It looks bad.
But there's no...
Like, I'd have been thinking, everybody needs to stay on this side of the train so that we don't tip it further. Yeah.
But there's none of that. And, in fact, the only reason seemed to be that terrible action sequence 2/3 of the way through the movie where Poirot can chase someone who, by the way, the big genius idea was to burn something in a barrel on the middle of a wooden bridge. He's going to start
Good
a
idea.
Fire in the middle of the wooden bridge upon which the train is resting. Like, now,
bad idea, genius.
How about you just open your window and throw the pages out the window and they'll just float down whatever giant ravine you're sitting next to. Same
It'll
with
fall down the Alps.
Same with
just let it go.
Yeah, there's another clue that another character apparently, when the crime is being committed, burns a piece of evidence and then leaves it, as opposed to, again, while the train is moving, open the window, throw it out the window,
throw it out.
No more evidence.
Yes.
It's just like this is so dumb. What is up with Poirot laughing out loud as he reads Charles Dickens?
What Charles Dickens novel is funny?
Or
they're all just like the worst depression England
right.
horrible moments ever.
He's laughing out loud. What's up with there's a piano player during one of, like, there's an especially tense scene in the bar car where characters are, like, yelling at each other and Poirot is, like, accusing them all of murder. And honest to God, there's a train employee just happily playing the piano in the corner.
I missed that.
I think
totally.
At one point she gets up and leaves, but it's like she was really just sitting there tickling the ivories while they're, like, accusing each other of murdering a man. Like, it made no sense. And finally for me, is Derek Jacobi really dying? Because his character in this movie says he's dying, and I thought he looks and is acting like he's dying.
Oh, dear.
Like, was this Kenneth Branagh, like, throwing his buddy a bone with, like, I'll give you one last movie role before you croak? Or is it...
Eesh, I hope that's not the case.
I don't know. He looked awful in this movie and did no good acting.
Oh, man. Well, for everybody's sake, let's hope that's not the case. Buddy, are you ready for 5 questions?
Yes.
All right. 5 listener-submitted questions from Murder on the Orient Express. Thank you, listeners. Danny, question number 1. Angelina Jolie and Charlize Theron were originally offered the role of Mrs. Hubbard before it eventually went to Michelle Pfeiffer. How many more actresses would have had to pass before it went to Helen Mirren?
I don't know, but actually Helen Mirren is probably more age-appropriate. Neither Angelina Jolie or Charlize Theron should have been old enough to play that character, so I'm glad they passed.
They could have given it to Judi Dench. Was she in this movie?
She was. She played Princess Dragomira.
So she was in this movie. Okay, I've already forgotten that as well. Okay, question number 2. It's Movember, so weigh in. Which 2017 Kenneth Branagh film character had the better mustache? Murder's Poirot, or Dunkirk's Commander Bolton?
Did Bolton have a mustache?
He did not. This is an easy
answer. Okay,
I was
going to say,
this one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so it's,
yeah.
But I hated this mustache. This was not a Poirot
mustache.
And
how does he get a cover for that mustache like he woke up with that night? Like, does he have to, like, constantly have that thing, like, reformed, like that weird plastic case that encases it?
Yes, and in fact, in both the prior version and in other adaptations, you see or will read about Hercule Poirot, like, having to, like, wax his mustache and wear a thing over it, and sometimes he wears gloves before he reads the newspaper to not get ink on his hands. Like, he's really a weirdo, and this one really kind of dialed up the weirdo when they were trying to get a cheap laugh at his expense. Otherwise, he was like a superhero. So
All right.
Poor.
Question number three. What's up with Daisy Ridley here? Was Keira Knightley not available?
Fair. I felt like this was probably a role that Keira Knightley either turned down or her star,
right?
her star isn't shining so bright, so we'll get Daisy Ridley in here.
Okay, yeah. All right. Fourth question. This film features Daisy Ridley, a character named Daisy, and is produced by Ridley Scott. Where can I find the one person on IMDb who found that interesting and put them out of their misery?
Was that really on IMDb? That's a great...
I didn't fact check it, but I'm trusting our listeners to have accurately reported that.
I think it's...
Do you have any way we can find them? And
no.
Okay. All
so
right,
the answer is no.
Let's not then. All right. Final question. Now having seen the film, can either of you think of any reason that the Imagine Dragons song was even slightly appropriate for the trailer?
Not at all. Not in the slightest.
I agree. You're in the hot seat, but I gotta say, like, I even came home and reread, like, the lyrics to the song, thinking that something tied in here.
No.
That was just weird. The movie poster font that you referenced, the song, these are odd. These were really anachronistic.
These things, the font, the song, and like the action scenes seem totally designed to try and jazz up what is a locked room mystery for adults and try and sex it up so that young people want to go see it because they might not go see it otherwise. And I just think, what a shame to not just lean into what this is and do the best job of that. Instead, you kind of pee all over it, trying to appeal to some other crowd that's probably not going to see it anyway. And that's a shame.
Right. Not when Thor's out. Yeah.
Right.
So anything else to add? Any final thoughts for Murder on the Orient Express?
Yeah.
Version 4.
My final thought is I hope this is a huge hit. It had a good opening weekend. I hope it has great legs and makes a ton of money. I hope people want more of this character, and I hope we get more of it. I just hope it's better next time. And I would strongly encourage anyone to see the 1974 version. It is slow, but it is creepy. Like, there is some dread in that one.
Interesting.
And the way the camera work is done and the way they use the flashbacks in the prior version, I thought are so much more effective. It's really well done.
Well, I love me some Albert Finney, so I am confident that that's going to be an Amazon rental in the very near future. What do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, we have another Best Picture winner, this time from 1992, The Unforgiven, with Clint Eastwood.
Thanks for listening to the Spoiler Alert Podcast. Please visit us online at movieoutsiders.com, where you can see what films we'll be discussing next, comment on our recent episodes, suggest movies to review or topics to discuss, or submit questions for the 5 questions segment of the podcast. Stop by and visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/movieoutsiders, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @movieoutsiders. If you're a fan of the show, we'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast subscription service you use. We'll be back again next week with another episode, but until then, enjoy the movies.